Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Marcia, and welcome to the show. We are in, I was on last night, but this is a new show. We have World of Ink Network, and that's what this we're coming from that, and we're Blog Talk Radio, and we have great guests today, and we have a new person, we're actually on. Mary, are you there?
Hi,
Mary.
Hi, Marcia.
Okay. Hi, Mary Rita is there. She is a book reviewer for Michigan Avenue Media. And she'll be helping out today, and she's going to be helping me with some of the shows. We've added some shows, Virginia Grenier and myself, of the World of Ink Network, and we will have many different shows, different topics. Virginia is doing a lot of the children's books because she has her new magazine story of children's stories, and that is, I will give you some information on that later. And she has another show, which we are doing on Friday afternoons, both of us, and we're starting that this Friday, and we thought it was going to be every other week, but I think we're going to do it every week because there's so many people that want to come on, and it's going to be a good show. It's about the entertainment field in general and producers, directors, publishers, editors. It's the whole gamut, kind of what I do and more. And then today's show, we have a great show planned because Bennett is on, Bennett Pomerantz, and he's going to be a regular on this show, and so is Fran Lewis. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. I think I'm going to let Fran and Bennett introduce themselves. So, Fran, go ahead. You can introduce yourself because we've been on tons of shows together, so I think I'd like to hear what you say about yourself.
Okay. I don't normally say very much about myself. I'm a book reviewer. I've been doing this for about a year and a half. I wrote 6 books, and my new book, Because We Care, is going to come out, I hope, in 2 weeks, as soon as I have it edited properly and the dedication is done. It's dedicated to my mom, who just passed away 3 weeks ago, and it's for people that are interested in elder care abuse and Alzheimer's and learning about caregiving. I also do online reviews for authors, and I host 2 radio shows, and sometimes I'm a guest on this one. So
right,
that's basically what I do. And I am an educator, too. I have to put that in, right?
36 years you are. Definitely. You were an educator, right. You have to, that is a major thing. That's major. You know, can't forget that.
I can't forget that.
Okay, and Bennett?
You ready for me?
Yep, I'm ready for you. Go tell me what you do. I know what
okay.
You are.
I'm a reviewer.
Right?
I'm a reviewer. I have a writer's column in Night Owl Reviews for writers called A Piece of My Mind. I have a newspaper. I have a couple of newspaper columns, Audio World, A Piece of the Page, where I review Audio World. I review spoken word productions. If I can talk, I'll be happy. And Piece of the Page is books and graphic novels and those kind of things. And my To Be or What is commentary, op-ed mostly. And then, of course, I also review for Amazon, Affaire Decor, Truckers USA. I don't do anything. I'm lazy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
and then, of course, I'm also in the collection Loving Hearts Live Forever. And I'm working on some other projects, which I can't talk about yet.
Right. See, this is great. I mean, because, you know, there's always time and everybody says, oh, I'm too busy to do this or that. But here we have a busy crew. Myself, I am working 24 hours a day, and I do Michigan Avenue Media. I do Marcus Bryan, and I also have electronic business, which I do also, which I don't ever talk about. But I'm a writer, and we're going to have something very special coming up where I'm going to be doing a soap opera on the radio, and it's going to be from my screenplay, It's Never Too Late, and it should be lots of fun. It'll probably be in a month. We're casting now, and it's going to be fun. Something different, and there are radio shows, but I think that since everybody's on the internet, and it's probably only going to be 15 minutes a week, or we may decide to do it more, but I think it might be fun, and I'm looking forward to doing that. So that's what we're going to be doing, and Virginia and I will be doing a lot of shows, and Mary will be reviewing. We also have Vicki Russo reviewing and Denise Spooner, and so we've got a lot going on, and everybody is busy, and that's good. And we have a major subject today to talk about, which is anybody that's listened to me before knows that I probably sound like a broken record, but I think it's one of the most important things that we have to talk about books is what happens to writers who publish a book Then they either self-publish or traditional. It's equal now. It's not just self-publishing. But what happens after that? We need PR and other things. So we have two people right there now, Bennett and Fran, and they're going to talk about a lot of the things that really are, you know, we need to change. And then if we change them, I think it'll be better for everybody. So who wants to start? Bennett, you want to say something? I'm sure you do.
No, I'll let the ladies first.
Okay, ladies first. Fran, go right ahead, Fran.
Uh-oh.
Here we go.
Uh-oh, now I'm in big trouble.
Go right ahead.
Well, and I've self-published 6 books, so I understand this question, and it's really hard. After you publish your 6 books and they tell you it's on Amazon, and I also review for Amazon and Barnes & Noble, my question is, how do you know that your book is there? How does anyone know that your book is there? Now, the publishing company that has done my book said, well, we're going to call you and you can have a Kirkus review, or you can have this review, or pay money for a book fair and all of that, or you can go to the Javits Center and put your book there for $4,000 and we'll put it on the table for you. And to me, that's nothing. So my question is, and maybe Bennett can answer this, my problem is, how does somebody know that when your book is on Barnes & Noble, how do they know that it's there? I mean, I self-publish like other people have 6 books, and I'll blog it on Facebook, and I have like 10 different blogs, and I'll tell everybody, you know, to buy the book, and I'll put the links out, and I'll tell other authors the same thing, and I'll do online reviews, which are great, and I think book reviews are crucial. Honest book reviews are crucial. I also feel that if somebody published a book, and I've had that problem, where the book has, you know, it's poorly edited, I've had my 3 books re-edited because when people were reading them, they said, you have typos, and it's not your fault. You paid to get it edited, now you got to get it done over again, because no one wants to read a book with mistakes in it.
Nope.
I just got permission from Ex Libris to convert all of my books to e-books, and I think that's fantastic, because maybe more people will buy them if they can, you know, afford to buy e-books also.
Yeah.
But my question is, if you wrote 10 books and you're not Michael Palmer or James Patterson, how do you get people to know that the book is on Amazon to buy it? I mean, I wrote 3 children's books and 3 self-help books. How do I get mine to be right there rather than anyone else's to be there? That's the question.
Okay, let me try to give you some sort of answer, okay? The problem with a lot of publishers these days, since everybody seems to say they're a critic. I've been doing reviews since 1985. I just started. You can tell since 1985.
Right.
I'm a youngster, right? Okay. But the point is that a lot of people in Goodreads and everything else, a lot of these people get the book or get the Kindle or whatever, and the first thing they say is, they start reading it and it's not their type of tea, and they say, oh, I give it 2 stars because I like the cover.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah,
that's not a review.
Right.
You know, when I do my columns, when I do Audio World or I do a piece of the page or I even do my Affair de Cour column, and I'm reading this from my article here, I try to pick and choose what I think my readership wants to read in my column. I admit sometimes I'm wrong, but I try to gauge what my audience wants to know. And that's the important thing, is that I, as a critic, have to gauge. Now, let me go on to, this is from my Affair de Cour column that will be out in June. Mm-hmm. It says, while I'm on the subject, let me answer this question. Do I like panning someone's work? Let me say this. If I was misleading about reviewing something, a book, audio, DVD, or something else, my usefulness as a reviewer would be nil. If I played favorites with my friends in the industry, I'd be doing less of a job that I care about and love. And I know that there are other reviewers and other magazines and other publications that do that. Mm-hmm. I have friends in both book and audio industries, and I've said nice things and also torn the crap out of projects of people I know.
Yeah.
I try to err on the positive, but that doesn't mean I'm a pushover.
But have they changed?
I will be honest with them.
After you've said that to them, has it been positive for you after they've read what you've done, their next book, do they try harder or do they?
Well, I don't know if they try harder. I know I've been honest, and
yeah,
I tend to get their next book if that means I give them 3 stars on Amazon or if I give them if I give them a bad review in Affaire de Coeur, or if I give them a bad review in Audio World or
right.
Piece of the Page,
yeah.
I still get the next book. Maybe it's my good looks. I don't know. But
Fran gets hers too. Fran gets the new book, and that's a good thing, though, that you're getting the book.
Yeah.
They
well,
you
know, if
you
they're
then.
Giving me the new book and they say, "Here, try it again,"
yeah.
you know, you may
yeah.
like this.
Right.
Then
well,
at least
good.
They're attempting this. I mean,
well,
I had
good.
A couple of publishers. Go ahead.
No, that's good. I was just going to say that's good.
Well, I've had a couple of publishers, and I love this. This audio publisher, and this was about 10 years ago, says to me, he says, "I want you to hear this and give me your opinion." And it was read by Elliot Gould, so it was professional. It was not something to just walk off the apple cart.
Right.
And I said, "Well, you can hear the sound breaks. You can hear the hissing. You can hear some pages turning and this, that, and the other." And basically, and I told him this. And he says, "Well, what do you know?" And he went to another person. And the other person told him the same thing. And the other person, who was a friend of mine, didn't know that I reviewed it or heard it, said, "Have you asked Pomerantz yet?"
Yeah.
And it was like, I'll think about it. And they went
yeah.
to a third person. The third person told them the same things I told them. And then they said, "Did you ask Pomerantz yet? He knows what he's talking about." And the publisher goes, and this is, you know, says, "I'll think about it." And it's like, you know, he will never, and I've seen him since, but he will never mm-hmm. admit to me that, and I'm not naming the publisher, I want to live,
uh-huh.
but he will not admit to me that I was right and he was wrong. In his mind, he's right. The author is not perfect, neither is the publishing house. And if you're honest with the readership, that's what they want. They'd rather have somebody give a 3-star review and a 4-star review as long as you're positive.
Right.
There's a lovely woman named Cassandra Dane. And
we had her on the show, right.
I loved her last book. And yet she did something which I would never do, is left it so open-ended at the end of her story. And I'm not trying to spoil it. So anybody that reads erotica, go for it. You know, it's a great book. And if you go to Amazon, you look me up on Amazon, as a person, you could see the review. You could go and you can buy the book, and it's on a Kindle. I don't know if it's on a Nook, but I know it's on a Kindle. And if you want to buy it, it's great.
When you said she left it open, does that mean...
She left it open-ended.
Okay.
The ending was sort of like, I felt like I was left at the altar.
Okay.
I like a book
that
has...
Oh, I see what you mean.
It was left so open-ended, I felt a little amiss. It's not that I don't like Cassandra Dane. I think her stuff is good. However, with an open-ended thing like that, yeah, you could do more things with the characters. But give me something. Close the loop, but slightly.
Right.
You know, she closed it with a joke, and it was like, but left it open. Is the character uh-huh. coming back tomorrow? It's like the old story of the lady and the tiger. I don't know if we all remember this story from childhood. The soldier is at the two doors. One has a ferocious tiger that's going to eat him alive, and the other has a beautiful lady, and then the king would accept him as a son-in-law. And it's left where he's standing at the door and his hand is on the door. And that's what I was left with. And that's
left,
how
yeah.
I don't like
yeah.
a book like that.
Yeah, but you know, I guess some
right.
people would say, yeah, but some people might say that they would like to, you know, that makes them want to read the next book. But I understand that that would be, you know, I'm sure she's got a next book. You know, I'm sure there's one coming
yeah,
out.
Yeah, but I don't think she's going to use these characters. I don't know.
Oh, you don't know.
I don't know if she's going to use these characters. But, okay, if you read, say, the late Robert B. Parker Spencer books,
yeah.
he mm-hmm. always closed-ended it.
Yeah.
So it was mm-hmm. wrapped up at the end of the book.
Right. See, that well, that
right.
was one of the reasons it was funny, because I was talking about this, because I'm, you know, in a soap opera, you know, I've not done a soap opera before, but it's funny because you don't have to end it because you know that that's what people are waiting for, but in a book, that is not the case. You really, you know, because I do like a good ending, and I feel that way in movies, too. I have a hard time if I walk out of that show and I really don't know what happened to a lot of the characters because I really want to know. So I try in my own writing to round everything out because I like to know what happens to everybody. I don't want to be left. And especially in a book, because you, yeah, like you're saying, you don't know if there'll be another. And that, you know, that for me, I like to feel satisfied, certainly in a movie, because I know that people have walked out of movies that I've, because I try to listen to what everybody's saying, and when they're not satisfied, you can hear it, you know, and I like to listen to their comments. And it's not what you want them, it's not what you want. You want people to walk out of like a movie or what you want them when they finish the book to be satisfied. And Fran, when you read, you find that is what happens?
Well, there is. I just finished one of the New York Times bestselling authors' brand new book. The publishing company actually sent me his brand new one that came out yesterday. And he has two reoccurring characters. And the character in this particular book is the Lincoln lawyer, and it's really good. I didn't read
Michael
any
Connelly.
Of the reviews until Michael Connelly's new book, Fifth Witness. I loved it. He didn't leave it open-ended at the end, but I could tell you that Mickey Hall is going to be back. It just tells you at the end, and I won't say what, that he's going to go for another position. And what some people gave it, I won't tell you what I gave it. Some people gave it 1 star. Some people gave it 5. Some people, when I find on Amazon, and I don't know if Bennett does, some people don't actually read the book. Some people just want their name on Amazon and say, I read the book, it's really good, I think this is great, and they don't even tell you what the book is about. My book reviews tend to be in-depth, that's what I've been told. And I don't know what Michael Connelly thought of my book, I don't know what the publishing company
thought. Are you saying Lincoln Law, the movie Lincoln Law?
The book
same author who wrote Lincoln
right,
Lawyer.
Yeah.
Lincoln
okay,
Lawyer,
right.
Yeah.
I saw the witness. Movie. I saw the movie, and I think when you're done with the movie, you want more. So I think that's probably what might happen.
This is
the character of the Lincoln lawyer is only mentioned in about 1 minute in the novel.
Yeah, but
there's a small reference to him.
Well, Michael Haller is Mickey Haller is the character in The Fifth Witness, the Lincoln lawyer, and the book is really, I thought it was really good. I liked it. But what I find also is I review for 3 sites on the net, and the 3 sites that where they send me their books and I review for them, I was told when I first started to review for them that you can write and be honest, but they do not want you to give the authors less than 3 stars on a book. That if you give an author less than 3 stars, they might not post your review on 2 of the sites. And one of the sites, I can be as honest as I want, but they don't want you to be so brutal that the author is not going to get at least some kind of a decent review. And I have given, 2-3 stars here and there where I thought that the editing or that the plot was contrived or it didn't make sense or it didn't flow. But basically on the sites that I do review for, one of them will let me put anything. You can put 2 stars, 1 stars. The other 2, like I said, you have to put at least a 3-star rating. Otherwise, they won't publish the review. Or the author has the right to tell you that they don't want you to publish it. And that sort of kills it for those of us that want to be a little bit more honest. But I guess, I don't pan people's books, but I don't know how you feel, Bennett. If I really don't like the book, I won't review it.
Well, there's
or
a movie.
I will just
there's
write
a
summary.
On there's a movie available on the reviews on Amazon, and they, they won't do just a no star review, okay?
Yeah.
And so I told there's a movie called Blonde and Blonder with Pam Anderson and Denise Richards, which is the most terrible movie. Golden Turkey Award winner, Razzie, whatever you want to call it. And so I'm watching this on DVD, and I said, here at Amazon, they don't have no-star reviews, so I'm putting a 1-star review. You realize you can use this disc as a coaster, or you could even think of it as a frisbee for your dog.
And I gave
the reasons why it's so bad,
wow.
But the thing is, at the end, I told them what to do with the DVD if they got it as a gift.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I got a lovely letter, a lovely email, not a letter per se. Nowadays, emails are letters these days. But I got a lovely letter, and I thought it was adorable. This woman sent me the letter and said, how dare you pan my film, and she was one of the producers. And I'm like, I said, I'm sorry. I did it. honestly, you know, was not like a malicious or anything
right.
else. She uh-huh. says to me, she says, "How dare you?" And I said, "I'm sorry. I mean, what can I tell you? I did
yeah.
what was honest."
See, that's the thing, you know, when you put yourself out there, whenever you put a piece of work out there, whatever it is, I mean, you know, I mean, if you're doing a screenplay that turns into a movie and, you know, sometimes the screenplay writer is very upset how the movie turns out. So, I mean, there's on all levels, things don't always work out. But when you are in this field, you're putting yourself out there. So there's not, you know, it's not about rejection. It's about just what people think. You know, one may like it and the other one might not. You know, 10 people can go to a movie, 5 people like it, 5 people don't. You know,
the one problem I have with Amazon, less Barnes & Noble, but the one thing I have problem with Amazon is like a public thumbs up or thumbs down. At the bottom of an Amazon review.
Yeah.
Right.
The one thing I always love is, was this review helpful?
Yeah.
Well, if you read it and you got something out of it, bad, good, or indifferent, it's helpful.
Yeah.
I hate these people that they see my name and they give me a negative review because they don't like who I am.
Yeah.
It becomes a popularity contest because
yeah.
I'm not
oh.
popular. They need to
basically
pan me because I'm not popular.
Well, the truth is important. You know, as I've done this for – I've had my agency, Marcus Bryan, for over 15 years, probably 17 years, and – the problem is that I have always wanted to be supportive to all of these people because I am just like them. I'm a writer, and I'm, you know, we're all the same. I mean, I consider myself just the same as they are, and I try and I work very hard at it, and I've done screenplays, books. But the thing is that sometimes by not telling them, which I have done in the past, and I don't think I'm going to do this too much anymore because I think that I have actually made monsters out of them because they actually think their work is terrific now because they had an agent and they, you know, several people had read their scripts and things like that. And I maybe should have been a little harder than I was because I am noticing that they're not paying attention now. If someone says, oh, you need to edit this, you need to do this, I say to them, are you listening to my shows? Because I love doing these shows because I know that most people don't know these things that we're offering them and how lucky it is that they are finding these things out because you're not born knowing this. It takes a lot of work, which if you've been doing this for all these years, you know that you have learned things along the way. And I keep saying, are you listening to the shows? A lot of the Blog Talk shows, not just my show, but they can learn things and they're not. And that is bothering me now because there's all this information to help them. And Fran and I talk about this. I mean, we've talked about this all the time. You know, they don't want to edit. Mary's talked about it. Mary's in my office. And we've talked about it, and we've seen the work. And when we tell them they need help, they don't care. They don't want to do anything about it.
Well, okay, there's a site I know called Goodreads.
Yes.
And I know I read a review from a reviewer. I'm on Facebook, as most other people are, and this reviewer in Goodreads said, I got this book, and it's an erotic book. And it says it's an erotic book. That's not all I review, but the review said it's an erotic book, and it had a scene in there that I was not comfortable with. And so I didn't read it. But I give it 2 stars anyway. That's not a review.
Oh, yeah. That's not a review.
That's not a review. That's somebody saying, oh, yeah, that's great, but it's not a review. Come on.
Yeah.
If that's a review, I'm really worried because
I
can say that I love this because it's new, and it's new to me, and, you know, somebody turned a phrase, and I can say that in a sentence or two. And somebody says, well, that's not a review either. I said, you know, it depends on what you're looking for. If I said that it's an interesting project, you know, that's fine.
Yeah. What
really scares me is they have people like J.J. Abrams getting in the writing market and going to go directly to Kindle and things like that. Can't think of the gentleman, the one that created Babylon 5, and also Michael Connelly's taken all the rights to his books away.
Yeah.
After this one, he'll be putting them out himself.
Well,
because a lot of publishers are not. I'm sorry?
No, we didn't say anything. Go ahead.
But a lot of publishers are right now wondering what's happening, because a lot of online publishers, e-books, are now becoming more popular.
Yeah.
And the publishers, the print publishers, are getting scared.
Yeah. Well, saying the truth is, I, for all these years, I've said this many times before, I've had some wonderful books come through my doors, and the publishers were less than nice. I mean, I got form letters, and I'm an agent, a WGA signatory agent that does mean something, and they would just go, dear author, and I would call up and say, no, I'm an agent, I've read this, this is good, and they don't care, and they have really put themselves in a bad position. They put themselves in this position now only because what's happening now is some of the people that they were relying on to do books, the authors that they consider the A-list, they're now going on their own. So now, after all the, you're right, there's so many people self-publishing, and they are now thinking, oh, I might have made a mistake. I mean, they have missed. I mean, I can tell you they have missed tons of, and you know this too, I'm sure, Bennett, from all these years, they have missed a lot of good books. By not even caring about them.
I say this. I wrote a book many years ago. It's not the only book I've written, but I wrote a book many years ago called Revenge is a Dish Best Served Cold. It was basically my redo of The Count of Monte Cristo.
Okay.
This was about 15 years ago. For a year and a half, I tried to query it all over God's creation. And what annoyed me more was every publisher was like, oh, it's so cute, it's so wonderful, but it doesn't fit our little format.
Yep,
I bet if I put out the same book tomorrow on a Kindle, I bet it would sell billions.
I'm sure you would. See, that's the point. That's it. That's right in a nutshell what you just said. That's it.
Exactly, I know. But I wouldn't do that. You know, I left with my tail between my legs, even though I thought I had a great, great book. Friends were all saying, it's a great, great book. And enemies were even saying, it's a great idea. I love it.
Well,
and
it sounds like
enemies are
idea.
Saying that, you know.
See, it's just really sad.
You,
mm-hmm. Go ahead.
How would you go about, I mean, anybody, like whether it's your book or mine or anyone else's book, and you have a book that you feel is quality and it's good and people have reviewed it and they say it's great, how do you get people, I mean, you have people that read your columns all the time. Maybe some of them
exactly.
read them because they're negative. How do I get, people read my work on Angie's Diary. It's one of the online newspapers, and all of a sudden everybody's reading it. But how do you get people to read your blog? How do you get them to know that your book is there? I mean, there are 10,000 or more children's books. There are a lot of books. I've written one on Alzheimer's and traumatic brain injury. And
I'm going to say this to you. You get yourself out there. I do a show like this. I go out to a bookstore and make an appearance.
Right.
I used to do, and I'm saying my age, I used to do mystery and science fiction conventions. Out of 52 weeks a year, I used to do 20.
Really? Wow.
I was what ticked me off was I didn't have a home life because I was living on the road, basically, because Friday night I would leave, back on Sunday. And Monday morning, and I was working. I was working very hard promoting Bennett, the columns, everything else.
That's really what you have to do. And Fran does that. Though.
Oh, yeah.
Fran
I knew
there.
I was. I had my agent would say, "Hey, you got to go to XYZ City because you have a column there. It comes out Sunday." Great.
Right.
So on Saturday, you best believe, I said, did you get the paper? Did you get the paper on for you getting Sunday's paper? You know, and people were suddenly on Sunday, they were going, oh, my God, you're him. Can I touch you? And it's like, I always loved it when I started. Originally, my column, A Piece of My Mind, was in Coffee House for Writers. And I would do writers' workshops in libraries and things like that. Or I would take my nonprofit, The Write Stuff, where I teach literacy to kids, out to schools. It would get articles. I was in Iowa. I was in Florida. I was in Pennsylvania. And I talked to the kids. And it would get press because this writer has come to talk to the children. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, because he is not spending money, you know, he's spending his own money getting here.
Yep.
The school's not paying
right.
for it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Suddenly, it's got a, you know, little, oh, he's somebody,
yep.
which makes it more popular. Suddenly, I'm like, I'm not just this Joe Schmo that walked off the
right.
apple cart.
Yep.
I'm a writer that has spent time with their children.
Yeah. Well, you know what, I'll tell you, though, that's a good experience because... I mean, because I think that Fran, you know, Fran, unfortunately, you couldn't go before because she was taking care of her mother. But now, you know, you can do some of the things that you haven't done before, and I think you will find that once you start doing it, you will actually be selling more books, and they will actually know more about you because you will be a face to them that becomes a reality. And I'm
yeah,
going to go
it's
out
just
more.
Hard. It's just hard when you're going, Barnes & Noble, there are certain ones that will let you come in and do a book signing. That's not a problem. But a lot of the other bookstores, the smaller ones that I've written to and the,
yep.
and the private
yep.
ones, unless you have, and it's hard because they will not take a self-published book for a Journal of Library Review, at least not up here in New York anyway.
Yep.
And the New York City libraries won't even take your book as a donation, which makes it really difficult. Because I've offered just to give them copies of all of my books, and they wouldn't. So I've given copies of my Alzheimer's books to the hospitals. I gave one. I was met with the head of neuroscience yesterday of three major hospitals in New York City because he was interested in my latest project. And they are creating a fund in memory of my mom at Montefiore Hospital in the Bronx.
God bless you, Mike. That's the hot name.
Montefiore
Hospital is a special hospital to me. I have a very special connection with Montefiore.
Yeah. And that's a
in the Bronx? Oh yeah. I was born in
yeah.
old Montefiore.
Really?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I'm still
coming
in the Bronx,
home week.
And,
yeah, and Fran
wow.
because Fran, they're gonna help you, you know, with your books as far as getting them out there. See,
yes,
because
yeah,
you know, you've always been talking about this, but you have also have books to back up what you're talking about, and you met with somebody for 2 hours yesterday that was a doctor who just was so, you know, wanted to talk a little bit about what happened yesterday.
I could not believe it. He sat with me, he's one of the top doctors in the world, Dr. Mark Mailer. He's a neuroscience neurologist, and his mother had Alzheimer's too. So we talked about it. I understood the disease before, now I really understand it, because he explained the research they're doing and exactly why it's not just the amyloid plaque that creates the problem for people with Alzheimer's, and he explained the three types of people that have it and who won't have it, and I truly hope that we're all in that last 5% called super ages.
Yeah.
That will never get it. But it was really, I was so heartfelt because, I mean, here is a man that is a big doctor all over the world and sat with me for 2 hours, and I told him that I wrote this book called Because We Care, and what they're going to do is they're going to their marketing department at Montefiore. I have to say hi to Tracy, a development director, and she's going to speak to them about promoting all three of my books, my memories book, my Sharper's Attack, and this new one, which deals with caregivers, volunteers, which is so important,
yes.
Alzheimer's disease, elder care abuse, nursing home abuse, which is a big issue, and traumatic brain injury, which is part of the reason my sister just died also. So it's been, like, you know, horrific. But I told them that I was going to give 50% of the proceeds from the book will go to Montefiore and the research for Alzheimer's biology cure, you know, the cure, if they help me promote the book. And I started it off with a check yesterday that I did give them. It wasn't $1 million. It was $100. But they were absolutely so thrilled. And at the end, he says to me, don't call me Dr. Mailer, call me Mark. I was like, okay.
That was really nice. No, because, you know, but I mean, it's nice to know that they paid attention to your book, and you know, because this was something that is very near and dear to you, and you know it from experience. It wasn't like you just made it up. You actually lived through this with your mother. So you're aware of all of it.
10 years.
Yes.
10 years it's been rough, and I'll tell you, I had said to her, if I had to do it for another 20, I would do it. It was not a problem. But
right.
now, you know, my brother never realized until recently what I was doing, and he also never realized the expense that went into it before we got all these services that were necessary in order to not have to pay for it anymore. But, yeah, Montefiore has changed a lot, Bennett. They have gotten amazing. They're really much better. Einstein Hospital, too. But no matter what you do, you need to always be with the person that's
right.
there. You know,
that we all know that
right.
this is definitely the truth. I mean, you know, you've got to be there. You know, and so, I mean, these are the ways that you will be getting out. But, you know, the good thing is that you have done some very good work. And that's why that you will now be, you know, you just couldn't do a lot of this stuff before. You probably might not even be able to go to visit the doctor, you know, before because you didn't leave your house that much.
And I left, but you know what? I had to always have the cell phone in my hand to make
right.
sure. That, you know, that the aides didn't need me. And I was lucky in a sense because I have 4 home health aides that took such great care of my mom so I could actually, you know, get some sleep at night. But the cell phone and my phone was always right by my side because
right.
who else was going to go down in the middle of the
right.
night to call 911 if something happened?
I did it for seven years, so I know what that's like.
Yeah.
And you know what? You wonder how you even got anything done at the time you were doing it. And I would do it again, just as you said. You know, my mother and sister, and, you know, it was very tough, but. You did it, and I'm not sorry I did it, but it does take, you know, you realize when you think back, you go, where did I get all this time, you know, because it's very time-consuming, and it's, you know, because you're always 5 minutes from the phone. You're holding that phone waiting for somebody to call, you know, because there's something wrong, and you have to answer a question. So, I mean, you know, so you're asking why you didn't get out there, but you will be out there now. I mean, because you are out there is what you could have done, and now you have,
I
the
know.
Road is open. And so you'll be able to do a lot of things now that you didn't do before. And I think that that's important. And I think, you know, we're talking about all of this, but the problem is, okay, here's the other thing. It's monetarily impossible for all these people to continue to self-publish because as the economy is, you know, is what it is, people really have great books. And I'm hoping that publishers, traditional publishers, will someday, and I hope it's soon, try to help some people publish their books and then maybe, you know, that will help some of these good books get out because
That's not
going
to happen.
I know. Well, I'm wishful thinking, you know.
I understand that, but your wishful thinking is...
I know. I've been doing it.
You've just said the secret words, the economy.
Yeah.
Publishing houses are going by the wayside very quickly.
Yeah.
People are eating, and I don't mean this in a negative sense, but... publishing houses are eating divisions and they're closing divisions.
Yeah.
People who used to, they used to have a great slush pile and they still do and have people that used to read and edit through them.
They don't have that.
They've cut their staff from 5 people to 2 people.
Yep, I know. That's the truth.
Right.
I know.
And,
that.
You know, the new breakout author. God was not that unless you're on an internet. And there's a lovely woman named Amanda Hawking. She made $1 million putting her books directly onto Kindle.
Yeah,
she self-published them directly onto Kindle herself as publisher, no other middleman or anything else, and she made $1 million.
You know,
now
you
does that, I agree with that? No.
You
do I disagree with it? No. She writes a very good book. There's another wonderful author named Lisa J. Comstock. She's self-published. She's gotten her first couple of books through Publish America, but she owns the Kindle rights. So she's put
that's
them on
good.
Kindle.
Okay. Yeah,
and she's good. Made money. I can't say money hand over fist. I don't know exactly what's in her pocket, nor do I ask.
Right.
But I know they're decent books. They're in a vein of, dare I say it, pirates.
Yeah.
I'm not a big pirate fan, but, you know, no offense, it's a genre right now since Pirates of the Caribbean is selling mad. It still does sell mad.
Right.
You know, but,
you know,
you were on my show. This is Marcia talking. You know, you were on the show.
Yes, Marcia.
With, yes, you were on my show. When you told me, you also told me I have to keep saying who I am, and I forgot to do that. I'm Marcia. Okay, and we had a show with the erotic thriller paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I remember
they,
it well.
It was a great show. And let me tell you something. They were, I mean, the people on the show were unbelievably nice. But they were so truthful and forthright coming up, and they're selling. They are absolutely selling, and they are really in control of their own lives, a lot of them. And they're doing it, and they're doing a great job. It must be a huge market. I think it is a huge market, isn't it? I mean,
well, yeah, I can't. Okay, It's like HDTV and Blu-ray.
Okay.
One of them had to survive. Blu-ray has survived. Okay. So is the Kindle going to survive, or is the Nook going to survive? I think the Nook has overpriced itself, so I don't think the Nook will be lasting a long time. But Barnes & Noble, of course, has gone down in the last two quarters. Now, they're invested heavily in this Nook. Are they going to keep investing in the Nook, or are they going to go over to Amazon Kindle? And some of the authors that, of course, have joined the Nook, are they also joining the Kindle, or are they not? I don't know, and I can't tell you. And it's something we did discuss in that show.
But is the reader,
the Nook
going to
be the next pet rock, or is the Kindle going to be? Is this wonderful invigoration of reading and literature coming out of e-books going to last, or is it going to die in 5 minutes?
I don't know. It seems to be doing very well, and and authors are doing very well on it, because I think that people are reading more than they did before. That's what I think, because it's right at their fingertips. So I do think that it is promoting reading. Rather, at the beginning, I thought, well, what about books? But they are reading, and that's the good thing. As writers, we want them to read however they read it. And they seem to be reading it.
That's where we differ, because there was a study that was just done that said basically that the education system, that children don't read anymore for pleasure. That children don't. It was a big study that children don't read for pleasure. And the thing is that they don't have that joy of it, because what they do in schools these days, they have to pass their standard testing.
Yeah.
And if they don't pass the standard testing, they don't move on to the next grade. So from, and this is one thing that really upsets me, is kids don't have an imagination anymore. You want a creative write? You can't, because you have to pass your test. That means from January and February, you study for a test that you have to take, a standardized test you have to take in March. And there are state guidelines. If you don't pass, you fail, and you could be getting all A's in school and fail that test, and you don't graduate. You don't move ahead.
Is that really something now? Is that really something?
That's my thing. Uh-huh. That's my forte.
Yeah.
That's my forte, because I taught writing and reading. That was my thing, and I understand what Ben is saying.
Uh-huh.
From January until whatever, the teachers had to teach to the test, except that I guess maybe I was a little bit more creative than most people, and allow the children some kind of leeway, and using prompts that would actually get them to be more creative. Because if you ever read the test, it's kind of boring, and the prompts that they give are not very creative, and they're basically grading the children on these standardized tests on grammar. And actually what's really amazing is the high score on the ELA in New York City, which is the test that I had to give, is a 4. And in order to get a 4, you really didn't have to have no grammar mistakes. You could have 1 or 2. And what I found happening, and which I can understand where people would, I was upset as an educator, is that if a child is writing something and they got a glimmer of hope, whether it was organized or not, we were told that they can get a 2 or even a 3 on the test, which doesn't exactly help them, which doesn't exactly show them that, you can make mistakes, and unfortunately, in the real world, when you're writing a letter, you cannot have grammar mistakes or errors like that. Even on the math test, the children are told that you can have certain kinds of errors, and even though the high score is a 6 for what they say is a perfect answer, to me, if you get the answer wrong, that's a major error, and they will allow them, you actually can pass with the wrong answer, which doesn't make sense to me either.
Wow.
But I'm really glad to say, and I understand that kids don't have a chance to read what they want. Although growing up, Marcia knows, I had to read 6 books a week for pleasure. My nephews read every single day, I know that. And I know that they're constantly in the bookstore, constantly reading. Constantly, they got it from me, my nieces too. But I understand, because the focus is on that test, and it really shouldn't be.
But when we went, Mary was with me. Mary was with me when we went to schools, and we went to school. And these kids, what I found is when we were at they were kindergarten through second and third, and they were writing their own books, and they were asking me great questions. I mean, and they were incredible because they were saying, what genre do you write in? They knew about all of this. So maybe it does depend sometimes on the schools, because I was so impressed by them and the teachers, because the teachers were also, they had a whole, like, back, you know, kind of like a place where they kept books, a little back room, and they have the Hardy Boys and all the older books, and the kids were liking it, and they were enjoying reading. So I guess so. It depends on the school, because this particular school, I walked out of there, and I went, like, I can't believe how great they are with the kids and how much they're writing. They're doing their own little books, and they were so into it. I mean, they were.
Where is this school?
This is in Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah, this is in Chicago.
Well,
and
I think
maybe Chicago is better than some other places. I don't know.
Yeah, because we were.
I think it also
Mary,
depends on the parents.
Yeah.
The
That's
parents,
true, Mary.
I think, have a big influence there.
Yeah, they might.
Well,
because
I know.
They were,
as getting the children to enjoy reading as just reading,
so
not reading because you have to read it for a class. And I think that. You know,
I thought they were
they
unbelievable.
School, but I think it's kind of a combination thing.
Yeah, because I think these kids were amazing to me. Right? Maybe it is different areas. You know, I mean, you know.
And I think in
Chicago,
I think it's a pretty large. I mean, I think books are a major part of Chicago.
Yeah, they're making it that way, right? I think it is, and I was so happy to see that. You know, so maybe it does. You know. I mean,
it depends on where you are. I was in. I remember I went did a school. I brought my Write Stuff organization down to Meadsville, Pennsylvania, and I loved going in there. And I went into a library, and I said to the kids, and the kids looked at me like, "Who the heck are you?" And I explained what a writer is, and I started to say, "Well, how many of you like the Hulk?" And they looked at me, and every hand went up, and they knew exactly what I was talking about, you know, the Incredible Hulk, the Hulk, whatever. And I said, let me get this straight. A doctor turns into a monster, right? And they're like, yeah, yeah, the Hulk, right? And everybody's like following along the garden path. And I said, no, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I had this young man go, say what?
My favorite book.
And I said,
oh, that's good. I never even thought
and,
of it.
And
that's
you,
oh, my God.
Yeah. At the end of the day, because I also said that Lost was really Swiss Family Robinson and explained why. And then I also explained that Survivor was really Robinson Crusoe. And the Batman and Zorro and the Green Hornet were really the Scarlet Pimpernel. And these kids are checking out. And the librarian looked at me at the end of the day and says, what did you do to these kids? I said, excuse me? And she says, every copy of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, all 30 copies, went off the shelf. What did you do to them? I said, I did nothing to them. I just told them the truth. And this woman says to me, she says, one kid said he wanted to read the British Hulk. And I was like, okay.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you have to explain to these kids,
right,
you know, that basically that literature is just, there are only 27, 30 story ideas, and you've readapted them over the years to other things. Trading Places really Prince and the Pauper.
Well, this is a good way to look at it. So this is right. This is a good way to look at it.
Oh my gosh, that's wonderful.
You know, it's
and these kids are
like. The kids, whatever it takes to get them in.
Yeah, whatever it takes.
Because once you get them in there, then.
Yeah, I think I do think that, you know, it does matter areas, because I can see what you're saying. I mean, but you know, the truth is, and that's what they do with movies. I mean, when you go, you know, when you have to submit, you know, screenplays to production companies, what you give them is the log line, which the log line is supposed to be one line. It's almost impossible to do, but you do the one line or the two. And the thing is that, you know, we're all out there trying to sell screenplays, and they're going like, okay, a romantic comedy shouldn't be. I mean, they are predictable, because that's why you go to romantic comedy. You know it's going to be satisfying at the end. And you're right, there's only a certain amount of ideas. And they're just, it's whoever the writer is to change, you know, the focus of it on the characters and the dialogue. And that's what we need to, you know, show people that the problem is that let some new writers in, though. That's the other thing. Let new
mm-hmm.
people in. It's time, I think, and I've done this for years, which I think it is time to let some new people in and get some talent out there that is fresh and new and not keep giving people rejection notices or saying, I will not take my your self-published book in my bookstore. I had an experience in Chicago in one of the suburbs. I wanted to go to the bookstore. She says, well, they'll be fine if you want to take an ad in the paper, which is like a $500 ad, for her bookstore. For me to come there, I should take the ad out. I went, I don't think that's going to happen, and I didn't go. You know, it's ridiculous. But I'm putting myself in the same thing. There are good writers out there, and there are bad writers out there. And some of the bad writers get traditionally published, and they're missing a lot of writers. We all know this. But the truth is, if there's some way, and if there's some publishers listening out there or bookstores, this would be a great time for new people to come out. I mean, that's what I think, because as Bennett knows, I mean, Mary knows, I mean, Fran knows, we're all reading good books. And, you know,
we
that's
are.
What we're doing.
I have all the trash I have under my bed. I mean, you know, I don't know if they're good, but I know I've enjoyed them. No.
Yeah, I've seen some really
also,
good.
Also, you have to remember.
Yeah, like Fran, you know, too. You've seen some. You've had some great guests on, you know, and I've done a lot of Fran shows, and
they're really, really good. Interesting guests. I've had some really great guests. I've had some interesting guests. I've had my last show in March was kind of controversial because one of the authors spent 10 years in Phnom Penh for selling marijuana. And I thought that was really cool that he came on the show and answered all of my questions. Yeah, it was great. And it was no holds barred. And the other author was Rick Acker. He's an attorney general in Washington.
Right.
And he wrote about whistleblowing. And the person that came on as my guest author was Mark Mountain, who has a couple of books. And he works for the FBI. So I really, you know, I'll
And there was Ben.
Just
and
about,
Ben has a great book, Ben.
Yeah, Ben Lieberman's book
is
called Our Jobs, and it's the inside dope about what goes on behind the doors of a kosher meat factory and the mafia. I get all of it. I'll have to be very, very honest. There are certain books that I won't review, and there are certain types of books that I will not even
You will send me those, won't you, Fran?
Which ones? The ones I won't read, right? I think it's
the ones you won't read. I'll take them.
What about
I've
the ones
all the publishers, anybody that hears me, I'll take the book. I may take my time with it. I always love how a publisher, they send it to you on Monday and expect you to review it by Friday.
Right.
Yes.
I'm like, I'm fast, but I'm not that fast.
How many do you do a week? I do like 10 sometimes. If I'm in a good mood, I can do 10.
Reviews, it depends, because I also have to write a little. And I know you do, too. But I also listen to audiobooks. Like I just spent over the weekend with Susan Lucci. Not Susan Lucci in person.
Yeah,
Susan Lucci, 10.5 hours of her reading.
What, in her book, was it good?
Yeah, her new book. It's all it's on audio.
Yep.
And,
I would ask to read some audio books. I need to have the book in front of me so I could destroy it and write in it. And I have to turn.
No, I can
listen. And take notes.
I will tell you there is one you should listen to, and I'm really amazed with it. And I know he's listening to the show, not because I love his company, but the Colonial Radio Theater and Jerry Robbins, who have The Prince and the Pauper that just came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like listening to classic radio. They also have Zorro, the Zorro books that were young adult books that are out of print on audio dramatized.
Oh, gosh.
Now, what is
that? I'm not that old. Did you listen to The Shadow also?
When I was a kid, yeah. I mean,
my father
I also once in a while get radio shows, but I wish somebody would bring back The Shadow, bring back Doc Savage, and I don't mean in movies. I'm talking in books. I wish somebody would bring back
the
Avenger, which basically some of the classic G8 and the Battle Aces, which I grew up reading,
know.
You know, the pulps. We don't
have
magazines like Agrosi and things.
That. Right. I think that would be a good thing if they could, because some of these classic books, and I mean, they're really, I mean, and I think kids, you know, because when the kids that I've seen, I think they are very open. The ones that I've been, you know, to the schools, they are open. And I think that if it does depend on the teacher, as we were talking about before, but the teachers that some of them that I saw, I think they really want these kids to read, and not they want them to read a book. And the kids did really, the consensus was
well,
the kids
okay,
really like
this is
reading
where
books.
We differ. I would rather they read if it's junk. And when I say junk, Black Mask was a mystery genre. Mystery noir, crime noir kind of situation.
Oh yeah.
To most people, mm-hmm. most people would think that was trash.
Well, no, that,
you know.
No.
To
I think
me,
anything they
it
read.
Wasn't
I agree with
because,
you. I agree that they should read anything.
But it's still reading. But if you go and say I'm reading Black Mask magazine with a group of short stories or Black Mask collected, in the group of short stories, I hate to say it. If you look at some of the people that wrote for Black Mask in the 40s and 50s. You're dropping names, and I'm not getting into religion, but L. Ron Hubbard, yep. Ray Bradbury, Isaac Asimov, Mac Brand. You're not, you're talking about Henry Nutter. Some of the people that have been around for years. I mean, some of them are no longer with us, but you had these people that wrote short stories or novellas that were fascinating, and you know. That's why I said the trash under my bed. I'd rather read Black Mask magazines and dare I say it, used to pick up Doc Savage. Used to pick up Doc Savage the books. Now people would say that's trash. Fine, I'm reading.
Listen, when I had all of the, you know, erotic writers on there, and when I really think that, you know. I do agree that everybody should have their say in what they want to write, and I was so pleasantly surprised by all of them that were on the show. I mean, they were, I loved having them. They were great. And I think that, you're right, people should not thumb their nose at anything and just read it. And I think the one thing that you might agree with me on is the fact on the e-books, that now that some people that might want to read some of these other books that normally they wouldn't want to hold in their hand or keep in their purse or whatever, they will read them on a reader because nobody knows.
Yeah,
well,
you know,
I'm a stupid. Since I'm a critic, I will go up to somebody and say, "What are you reading?" And they look at me. That's none of your business.
Right, right.
And I'm
right,
like, it's my job because I'd rather know what they're reading.
I like to know.
You reading, Bennett? So what are you reading?
What am I reading?
She goes,
yeah, I just got
see.
Something
right
to read.
Now,
I'm
finished Susan Lucci.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
That sounds like something I would want to read. I like Susan Lucci. I think
yeah.
she's great.
Yeah.
Well, I have good news and I have bad news.
What's the bad news?
Susan Lucci on audio. Now, you want to read the book? That's great. But I hate to say it. The story is lovely and great and wonderful. But like a siren who calls the sailor to you, you know, the siren has nothing else to say after they go, and, you know, it's empty, you know, it's a lovely telling me her story. I'm not a fan of the soap, but the thing is, I am a fan of a good narration. I'd love to hear her narrate a regular book instead of her just trying to read her life.
You think her voice was something that you'd like to listen to?
Oh, her voice is fascinating. I was,
that's good.
But she has no characterization in it, nothing. The late, great Leo McKern, oh, God, he created – he was the one that, of course, did the Rumpel of Bailey, did some of the Rumpel on audio. And it was amazing because he created those characters – it wasn't just Rumpel was McKern's normal voice, but he would go and talk like this, and you know, and it was like, how many are in this production? And you had to look and go, it's only Leo McKern, but a good audio actor can do 20 voice. Ed Asner's another one that can do 20 characters, and you believe them.
See, you know,
if you get one that's narrated, narrated or read by someone really good, it makes a world of difference. Fran, you should check those out because it's a great way, and it's true. They can do every voice, and it's amazing.
Well, Joe Mantegna is excellent.
Yes,
Yeah. Well, his
the one from Criminal Minds.
Yeah, I would assume his voice would be great.
Has been doing audio for years.
Yeah.
And I remember when I gave him the golden headset a couple of years ago for Get Shorty, to tell you how long ago it was, he comes up and says, "You're that audio critic guy, ain't you?" I said, "Yes, sir."
No, I used to buy audio books for my aunt because she couldn't see, and she was a reader like I am. So I would go into the store, get one the book for me and the audio book for my aunt. Now my aunt's not here anymore. I don't know what happened to her audio books. But one of the sites that I review for him, the guy said there must have been about 10 audio tapes that Simon & Schuster offered, you know, for us to read, you know, to listen to. But I could listen. I just if it's a boring voice or the voice is annoying or they're not expressive. And somebody wrote 10 chapters of a sci-fi book and asked me to listen to the chapter. And I didn't realize that I thought the person was a guy. I didn't realize it was a girl. And I said, "Oh, okay. You have no expression. The person doing it sounds like they're humming and hawing." I said, "There's no flow." And I wasn't being mean. And the person said, "Well, that was me." I said, "Well, then liven up, people, because if I'm saying it, then someone else is going to say something else." And she actually fixed it, you know, what you were doing. And
well,
I read 10
do you ladies know who Donald Sutherland is, don't you?
Yes.
He's a wonderful, magnificent actor.
His voice is great.
He did one audio for Simon & Schuster called The Red Fox. This was in 1987.
He has a great voice.
He has not done an audio since when they saw my review.
Really? You didn't think? But you don't think
he
has
a
good...
Oh, God. You know, I didn't know whether... you know, I think Donald Sutherland could have been used as a sleeping pill.
But haven't you heard him on a lot of... I mean, he does some very good voices.
But, okay, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, five minutes,
right,
fine.
Right. You're right.
But you're talking 3 to 6 hours.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Stephen King, I had to listen for 24 hours. I was ready to take out the cassette to the range and go, "Pull!"
You know,
shoot
one,
the cassette.
One of the things is now that we all know that everybody needs to be edited. Now, then there's another thing that I wanted to bring up, though. You know, one of the things I know for sure, and Fran knows, people need to do PR. So I did email Suzanne Alicia, who has been on my show, and she does a lot of writing online, and she actually earns a living at this. And I asked her if she wants to do some PR for people, and she said yes. And the name of her company is All the Right Tips, and it's alltherighttips.info. And I think that she's someone that could help people, because I think I'm going to go to her too, because I think I can't work on this all day long, because we all need PR. And I think, but I do think, I don't know if you'll agree with me, Bennett, but I know Fran knows this and Mary, I think that writers out there, they cannot expect to do a book and not spend any money after that, because they have to go out and spend for some of these things, not a fortune, because I know what Fran was saying, that they don't need that at the beginning. They really don't. But they need to get themselves.
I agree and I disagree.
Well, how
I agree with you, but I disagree.
How can they work for free?
How can they work for free? No. What they can do is if they go and do a writer's workshop at a library, if they go to a school, yeah, it's working for free. But also you contact the press or the radio show or what not, or somebody.
But people don't know how to do that. You know, you might know that,
They know how to do that if they have to. They have to learn how to promote themselves.
They don't.
They
no,
need to.
They really don't.
They need to pull up their bootstraps and say, "How am I going to get some attention?"
Right. Okay.
If they're writing a book on Alzheimer's, then they need to go to lectures, or they need to start lecturing it at colleges or at homes or whatever. Your parents and Alzheimer's, and I'm not trying to nitpick, but you know, you then need to promote them. You need to do that.
But most of the people, but I will tell you this: most of the people, and Fran knows this for sure. I am telling you, over the years, and I've done this a lot of years, they do not know what to do, let alone make sure that their book has an introduction, acknowledgement, everything, and, you know, they need to know this. So what I'm saying is I think they have to spend some money to find some people that will help them in a limited budget, because a lot of people do not have a high budget, but they cannot just sit with their books out there and pretend that Amazon is going to help them. It isn't going to happen. And the publishers, a lot of the self-publishers, they take you to one step and that's it.
I have a lovely book. I have a book called Loving Hearts Live Forever. I'm just 5 pages in a 128-page book of collection. It's a wonderful book, and I will promote that right now. I've been to Barnes & Noble. You go to Barnes & Noble, you sit there, you talk to people. I've gone to bereavement societies online and in person. Does that mean I've spent money? In a way, yeah. I've got to spend my time from not working on the computer or listening or whatever and going and doing that. Am I on panels? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't charge anything either, but the fact of the matter is, though, I do think but people now, it's becoming overwhelming as far as when you get calls like I get, and I see what they have spent, and I am very upset about that. That's why I do this. I mean, I honestly say that, because they need to have some help. And sometimes, I mean, the things that we know, I think I'm trying to find people that will put in some kind of a package that they can actually help them somewhat, because honestly, they're floundering, and Fran, you know that. You've heard the same thing. They don't know what to do.
I've heard they don't know what to do, and then when you tell them what to do, they have to actually listen. I mean, I've gone to nursing homes, and I've gone to, you know, lectures and stuff like that. But it depends on how receptive people are to what you want to say. I mean, because I've been to, like, 20 or 30 nursing homes, which, of course, I didn't put my mom in one because I would never, ever, ever do something like that. So I know what goes on there, and that's the reason for this book, to make
people
aware.
However, I will say, listen, my mother lived with me, and then she lived in her own apartment, and I was there every day, and she lived with me also.
That's different,
but there was a time when I could not do what she physically needed.
Yeah.
I couldn't lift her, and I did. She was in a nursing home, but you have to be. I was extremely careful where I was, and I was there every day. And she had a phone. See, my mother could, you know, tell me what was wrong, but I went every day, and I made sure of the food she was eating and everything. So, I mean, you do. I mean, sometimes, so you can't really say that some people shouldn't.
Yeah,
because
it depends on.
Right, you can't.
It depends
sometimes
on the case.
You can't physically do it, but I was there every single day, and I think that not showing up at a nursing home is a bad thing. But when you are there constantly, they do take care. And, you know, there's a lot better. I mean, these nursing homes are a lot better. I mean, when my grandfather was ill, I know how bad that was. But this is, they're very different now. I mean, there's a lot of them that
are. The ones that are here where I am are definitely not. They need to look into them.
Yeah, we have several good ones.
You have to be really, really lucky to monitor it.
And they knew, I would bring them, in the kitchen. They would know what my mother was eating. I mean, I cannot say that it was a horrible experience, because it wasn't, but I was there every day.
Did she have Alzheimer's?
No. She'd had a stroke. Alzheimer's, that's different, you know, because my mother knew everything that was going on. And so, man, my mother, you know, and I talked to her on the phone all the time.
She could speak for herself,
Yes.
My mother couldn't speak for herself.
Yeah, but I had aunts that were, you know, had Alzheimer's, but, you know, but around here, there are some that are not horrible. I will say this, you know, I mean, years ago they were, but in the Chicagoland area, in the suburban areas, they're really not that bad. And I think that, you know, you do have to watch your family. You have to be there. I mean, that's the truth. You can't just not be there. I was there every day, and I called all the time.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, there are various things that people can do. You know, but you're right, going out and doing things to talk to these places. I mean, you've seen different things. You're in New York, I'm in Chicago. But I do think that things are not as bad as what you're thinking in some of the nursing homes here. So I do have to say that, because I really don't feel.
You just have to take care
when you're choosing.
Yes, you have
place.
To take a lot of care when you're choosing.
I
would think New York State does it too. I know in Illinois they send out a checklist for people that are looking, and things to look for and suggestions. And I think so many people are in this position now.
Yes, it's bad. It's bad.
I want to say it might have been February. There was in Women's Day, the whole magazine was dedicated to caregivers.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really good. It had a lot of good information.
Yeah, in the office.
Well, that's what this book is about. That's what I just wrote, exactly
right.
That, Caregivers
mm-hmm.
and
Caregivers.
Montefiore Hospital is opening. Right. Yeah, Montefiore Hospital is opening up a brand new caregiver volunteer center for Alzheimer's. It should be opening up within the next month or so. And I actually donated my books and a whole bunch of stuff to them. And they're going to have, you know, training for caregivers and volunteers.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because people don't realize that a caregiver, it's stressful. It's hard. It's not easy.
Listen, I did it. Best thing that I did was learn how to do all that, because in case they didn't show up, I had learned how to shower my mother, do everything. I did everything, and because I wanted to know that, because I did not want to be in the position to leave my mother with somebody that couldn't do it, and I wanted to make sure that I knew it, so I did. I learned how to do it, because I think you know, but it's not for everybody. Not everybody can do the things that I did, and, you know, and I do know that, but I think that, you know, these are all things that, and, I wish you success with this, because and I know they're actually taking a very good interest in
you. I do, too. I think that's great.
It's a wonderful thing. And does anybody have anything to say before we end the show and I announce some of the things that will be on? Bennett, any last words on authors?
No, I've just enjoyed myself, and
great.
Thank you, ladies.
I love having you on. It's great because, you keep me on my toes. That's a good thing.
Little old me?
Yeah, since we all work 24 hours a day, because we're all on, except, you know, I mean, Fran is up, she gets up at 3 in the morning when I'm going to sleep, because she goes to bed early. That's your time to get up. Fran, I see you. Fran is up.
I get up
and then
my husband goes to work early, so I'm really nice. I take the microwave and warm up the coffee, because cooking is not one of my skills or ever will be my skill. So I'll get up and I'll go, okay, I got you coffee here. Isn't this great?
Yeah.
And I'll lock up and then I'll say, okay, well, now that I'm up, I may as well answer some emails. I actually wrote the introduction to the book at 3 o'clock this morning.
See, I know, and Bennett's up, because I see Bennett at 3 in the morning. Bennett's up, and Mary,
yeah, well,
I don't
Bennett
hear
reviews
sleeping.
At 3 in the morning. That's when the phone
that's
stops
exactly
ringing.
That's exactly right, Bennett.
Yeah.
You do your best work.
You don't
see
me on email.
You have to email me or get Facebook me, Fran. We need to talk.
Okay.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Yeah.
I will
have
to Facebook you after this show.
Okay.
Yeah, I would
please
like
do.
To
I could use my help.
Thank you again.
You see, I like Facebooking people, because that way it's a lot more open, and people, it's a forum, and people can come up to me and say this, because when they read something that I'll write, say, for Eagle Eye Reviews or on Amazon, they don't know how to approach you, or unless they send me an email. I read your thing, and I hate you. Fine, you know.
I haven't gotten those, but I'm just trying to figure
that.
Out other sites to post my reviews on besides Amazon.
Yeah. Because Fran and I
we'll talk about that after the show.
Okay. All right. Thank you both very much. And Mary,
you survived
the first show. You did good. Thank you.
Mary's great.
Mary.
Oh,
Mary.
You're not going to say you're fired?
No. Yeah, the pay isn't that good, right?
No. I've learned
Yeah, you're doing well.
I hope I can talk with everybody more about edit or. About doing reviews.
Yes, I think
because
you're going to start to do reviews, and we're going to do honest reviews. That's how we're going to do it. And so I thank everybody on the show, and I just want to say that Friday, another show. I'll be talking to myself soon. But Virginia and I are doing a show, but we have a really good author on, which is Natalie June Riley. She will be on with us, and that should be fun. I mean, we're doing a lot of different things now that, you know, we're just doing a lot of shows, but we won't do it all of us. You know, we're not going to be doing this many, but right now we are. It's at 3 p.m. Eastern, not 3 p.m. Mountain time. I got to get used to Mountain because I'm Central. It's 4 Central. And that will be with Virginia and myself. And so everybody have a great day, and I appreciate all of you coming on, and thank you so much.
Thanks, Marsha.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Bennett. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.